This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalrymple Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Well, the night sky for February 2010. Well, as night falls, the constellations of Pegasus and Andromeda are setting towards the west. High in the south, you'll see the wonderful constellation of Orion. The three stars of its belt are great pointers. Down to the left, you have the very bright star Sirius, in Canis Major. Up to the right, you point towards the constellation of Taurus the Bull, with the Hyades and Pleiades clusters. High overhead, above Orion, is the constellation of Auriga, with the bright star Capella. The Milky Way runs through that. There's some very nice open clusters you can see with binoculars or a small telescope. Up to the left of Orion are the twins, Gemini, a nice cluster down towards the upper twin's feet. Then coming over towards the eastern sky, you've got Procyon in Canis Minor, and then a very faint area, which is the constellation of Cancer, but in there at the moment is in fact the planet Mars. And then rising, as the evening goes on, towards the east, is the constellation of Leo. Well, what about the planets this month? Not a bad month, in fact. Jupiter is now beginning to set very soon after sunset. You can still see it in the southwest as darkness falls at a magnitude of about -2. The angular size is still about 33 or so arc seconds. So if the conditions are good, a telescope will show you detail. But of course, it's very low above the horizon, not too easy to see. We'll come back to Jupiter in a highlight later on. Now, in contrast, as Jupiter is sort of going out of our view, Saturn is becoming better. It rises by about 9 p.m. in the middle of the month, and it goes due south about 2:30. So you can see it late in the evening. The angular size of the disk is 19 arc seconds. That stays pretty constant. The rings are actually about 5 degrees in tilt angle, so they're still pretty thin, and perhaps surprisingly, they are actually getting narrower again, and by the end of the month they'll be about 4 degrees. It's not until the end of March that they begin to open out. That's something to look out for, but of course, as a result, Saturn is not as bright as it often is. Now, Venus has been behind the Sun. It was at superior conjunction, that means it's precisely behind the Sun, on January the 11th. It's now beginning to climb up into the evening sky, and we'll come back to that when we talk about a conjunction of Venus and Jupiter. Mercury had a morning apparition last month, and it's now moving back towards the Sun. But you might just have a chance of seeing it, particularly on the morning of the 12th, when it is just to the lower right of a very thin crescent moon, just a few degrees above the horizon. You'll need to have a very good eastern horizon or southeastern horizon to see it, though. And of course, Mars has been at its best last month, and still this month it's very good. Opposition was towards the end of January. It's well up in the south by about 10 o'clock in the evening, and it's now in fact moving westwards through Cancer. And that continues until March the 8th, when it then in fact turns round and comes back through Cancer and into Leo. That'll be the end of its so-called retrograde motion. Bit more about Mars later on. So what about the highlights of the month? Well, as I briefly mentioned, on the evenings between about the 14th and 17th of February, Venus and Jupiter, the two brightest planets, can be seen together just after sunset. They're closest, in fact, on the 16th of February, but then they're only about 4 degrees above the horizon, and there's a lovely crescent moon hanging in the sky above. That should be a lovely sight. You need to get somewhere where you have a very good low, basically southwestern horizon, so you can see low towards the horizon. Those 2 days, well worth having a look out for Jupiter and Venus. Well, Mars, as I've said, it's still a very good month to observe it. Opposition was on Jan the 29th, and so now it's becoming higher in the sky in the evening. It's not as big as it sometimes is. Because Mars has an elliptical orbit, when we are at closest approach, sometimes Mars is a good bit nearer than it is now. The angular size has been about 14 arc seconds, but on a really good apparition, and there was one a few years ago when Mars was at its closest for 60,000 years, it's up to about 25 arc seconds. Gradually over the next 10 years, it'll start getting a bit bigger again when it's closest. But you can at least see it, and a good thing this time is it's actually nice and high in the sky. It gets up to about 60 degrees, so even though the image is small, you haven't got quite so much of the atmosphere to degrade it if you look at it with a small telescope. The North Pole is pointing towards us. You should see the North Polar Cap quite easily. Now, occasionally, we can see some of the brighter asteroids. The second largest asteroid, or second most massive, is Vesta, diameter of 530 kilometres. It's actually, though, the brightest and has a magnitude of plus 6.1, which means you could just see it with your unaided eye under perfect conditions. Now, during the month, it actually passes very close to the bright star Algieba, which is up in Leo the Lion. It's the star at the base of the main, really. And on the 16th of the month, it actually passes between Algieba and the star 40 Leonis, and it should therefore be very easy to pick out. I have put a little plot on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website. Just put night sky into Google, it'll come up, which shows you the path of Vesta through Leo around that time. And then finally, on February the 21st, the moon occults some of the stars of the Pleiades cluster. One of the pretty things about the Pleiades cluster, there's a beautiful arc of stars that sort of curves round to the lower left. And the moon, at about first quarter, is going to actually occult those stars, which means that the leading edge of the limb is dark. So those stars will just suddenly appear to disappear, if you can say that. That's about 18:50 on the evening of February the 21st. That might be quite a nice little thing to look out for. Again, the diagram I've put on the web, in fact, shows the Pleiades with the lovely nebulosity. You won't see that, of course, because of the light from the moon. But I couldn't get a picture easily which didn't actually show that, but at the same time showed me the bright stars, or the stars that the moon's going to occult. Okay, well now, we've been particularly asked by someone who's going to be in Sydney this month if we can talk about the southern sky. He asked if there was anything special he could see, such as a meteor shower. Sadly not. But let me just say some of the things that can be seen down in the southern sky. There's a region, basically Sagittarius through to Canis Major, that sadly we don't really see very well from our northern climes. Let me just point out one or two of the things along the Milky Way in that region. Well, Sagittarius, the main stars make up a teapot. And just above the teapot, there's a lovely region of luminosity called the Lagoon Nebula. You can easily see that with binoculars, maybe even with your eye. If you imagine tea coming out of the spout, they actually cross the position of a very nice open cluster. There are actually two open clusters, although, to be honest, they are just within the borders of the next constellation, which is Scorpius. Scorpius has that bright star Antares, a reddish star. But as the tail curves round, there's a bit of a kink, and there you see something that looks a little bit like a comet. There's a lovely cluster, something's called the Northern Jewel Box, but some nebulosity, and it's a bit of an arc, and it does look a little bit like a comet, so that's nice to see in binoculars too. We then come to a very large constellation, Centaurus. It has two very bright stars, Alpha Centauri and Beta Centauri. They are pointers because they actually point to the Southern Cross, which is surrounded by Centaurus. Now, Alpha Centauri is in fact two bright stars, one slightly bigger than the Sun, one slightly smaller, orbiting each other. And they lie at about 4.2 light years away. So the reason they appear bright is because they're close. We believe there's a third member of that little group, which is Alpha Centauri C, and that in fact is normally called Proxima Centauri, because at 4.21 light years distance, it's in fact the nearest star to us. It's a little, faint red dwarf star at about 11th magnitude. Now, Beta Centauri doesn't look nearly as bright, but in fact, it's about 100 times further away than Alpha Centauri, which means it must fundamentally be a very bright star, and it's one of the brightest stars we can actually see with our unaided eye. If you turn sort of up to the left from Beta Centauri, so you sort of curve round a bit, and go about one bright star and the same distance again, you may see a little fuzzy object with binoculars. It's actually about the size of the full moon, and that's Omega Centauri, which is thought, has been thought to be a globular cluster and the largest and brightest we have in our skies, but may well in fact be just the core of a galaxy which has been disrupted by its passage around our own Milky Way. It has got some young stars in it which globular clusters don't, and it's suspected it has a black hole at its heart. Well, the pointers point towards Crux, a little constellation surrounded by Centaurus, a little cross of stars, just below the left-hand cross, star of the cross, is a beautiful little thing called the Jewel Box. It's a lovely cluster. Most of the stars are blue, but there's in fact one red giant in there, which gives a lovely colour contrast. And below that, there's a region that looks quite dark. It's called the Coalsack, one of the darkest dark nebulae we see along the Milky Way, a region of dust which is obscuring the light from beyond. Well, beyond Crux, we have what used to be the constellation Argo Navis. That's been split, and the upper part is Vela, the sails, and the lower part is Carina, the keel. And again, there are some nice objects in there. The bright star in Carina is called Canopus, and that's often been used for navigation. I've mentioned before the Eta Carina Nebula, or the Carina Nebula, where there's a star that's likely to explode. That's a very nice bright region. And also not far from there is a little cluster called the Southern Pleiades. It looks like a sort of a slightly smaller version of the Pleiades we see in the northern sky. So it's a lovely region of the sky, and I do sometimes envy those who live in the Southern Hemisphere who have a chance to see it more often than I do. I do travel down south every couple of years or so, and will be there in the summer, so I'm hoping to look forward to seeing these things again. Thank you.